Good afternoon and welcome to the Oregon 529 Savings Quarterly Board Meeting. It is May 22nd, 2025. Today will be chaired by Barry Ford, the Chief Program Officer here at Oregon State Treasury.
Good afternoon, everyone. Barry Ford, I am the Chief Program Officer here at Treasury. I am standing in for Treasurer Steiner because she is in the process of preparing for her daughter's wedding this weekend, and wish them all well. I have the privilege of managing the Savings Network, among other functions here at Treasury, and I'm incredibly proud and pleased of the work this team has done in preparation for this board meeting. Couple of things I want to do before we get started. Let me review the agenda. Where we acknowledge the minutes, we'll ask my fellow board members to report on anything from their worlds. We'll hear from Executive Director Mr. Mann, hear a communications update, a security data update from our partners at Vestwell, an update on the savings plan, the college savings plan, and the ABLE plan, more data reporting, and finally an investment performance report. And then we'll open it up for public comments. And I know we have a few public comments ready to go. I am informed by our legal team that there is no need for us to approve minutes. So what I will ask for is whether there are any corrections or concerns about the minutes as provided in the report from either Mr. Turner or Ms. Schultes.
I have, nothing to add.
Okay. And Ms. Schultes, do you have any
concerns? No, I don't. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So the minutes are accepted as written. And let's move forward with any reports from our board members. And since you're in the room, let's start with Mr. Turner. Okay. Happy. That's great. Ms. Schultes, do you have any reports you'd like to share with the group?
I do not.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I do want to acknowledge that I am deeply thankful that you two are on the way to a family wedding and are taking time in your transit to be a part of this board meeting. I want to acknowledge the stress of that and the challenge of that. So with no further ado, let's move to the executive director report. Mr. Mann, you are up.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Obligatory sound check. Somebody listening remotely can indicate they can hear me. Otherwise, I will pause for a moment.
We can hear you, Mr. Mann.
Great. Thank you. And I do that because we did have an instance where one mic was not working and we didn't know until after the meeting. So make a habit of checking now. So I have a lot to cover and I know we're trying to keep things efficient. So I'm gonna talk pretty quickly and then happy to go back if I move too fast or if there's questions. And I actually have one additional item that isn't on the slide because it was a bit of breaking news early this morning, and that's the passage out of the U.S. House of Representatives of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, a comprehensive domestic policy and tax bill that has over 1,100 pages, but a couple that I think are really important to this board. The bill is certainly to be adjusted before passing the Senate, but as the bill stands now, all of the ABLE-related provisions that we wanted to see in the bill are, in fact, in the version that passed out of the House. So they fully incorporated the ENABLE Act. And that means there's a permanent extension of the ABLE to Work, ABLE Savers Credit, and the 529 to ABLE rollover provisions, all of which are positive features that were recently enacted as part of federal policy on a temporary basis, and they've now been made permanent. There's also a incorporation of a bill known as the Freedom to Invest in Tomorrow's Workforce Act. This was a bipartisan measure that allows 529 plan funds to be used for certain credentialing and workforce training programs. So another sort of continuation of the expanded uses that 529 accounts can be used for. So there's a lot more in the bill, a lot more analysis that needs to be done. And of course, changes will still be made, but a couple pieces of good news there on the federal policy front. Okay, now moving through what you see on the slide, the 2025 priorities we've discussed previously, but I'll just briefly revisit them and say we continue to develop partnerships, update materials, prepare outreach strategies for that January 1st effective date of the ABLE Age Adjustment. We are deeper into the rebranding project for OCSP, recently completed the research and survey phase. And the goal, again, is to ensure our name, logo, messaging all reflects the versatility of the plan so that families have confidence in the many ways that the what is currently known as the Oregon College Savings Plan can be helpful to them and young people in their lives. And then the community grant program, we piloted this idea last year, and we're looking to work with more organizations. Basic idea here is that we recognize we're not always necessarily the best messenger. If we can identify those trusted messengers in community-based organizations to talk to their clients, their customers, their friends and family around the value of ABLE and the College Savings Plan, we can equip them with resources to navigate those conversations. So more to come on that, but we're planning for a continuation and expansion of the grant program. Big update here in the quarterly update section. The baby grad and kindergrad incentives are now $100. So they were previously $25. And as a reminder, these incentives are available to anyone who opens an account for a beneficiary under the age of one, that's baby grad, or age five or six, and that's kindergrad. This increase in the incentive was effective May 1st, and the previous incentives showed strong results in helping people start saving early. Hadn't been adjusted in a number of years, and we're hopeful that this increased incentive will help more families start saving earlier and get the full benefit of the program.
Mr. Mann, are we seeing any early indications of uptick?
I don't have any early data yet to report. We'll be sure in August, once it's been in place for more than a few weeks, to share what we're seeing at that point. And then you know, the benefit of keeping the structure of the program the same is we'll have a sort of A-B test of over a little bit longer period of time, whether the incentive made the difference. And we'll be adding, of course, you know, various communications and marketings to help promote the new incentive as well. This next one is a bit of a surprise. Just in recent weeks, we were approached by folks in Hood River who had a donor who had pledged $25,000 for the purpose of seeding College Savings Plan accounts and ABLE Savings Plan accounts. And the team all came together quickly to get a plan in place to help make this possible, because a key feature that the donor wanted to see was the current kindergarten class in Hood River to be eligible for $100 seed for accounts opened like this school year, which of course is almost over. Some quick work has gone into place. We're finalizing an agreement with the Hood River County Education Foundation and the Hood River County School District to make this possible. And I think I skipped over, this would specifically apply to kindergartners, the outgoing class, and then the plan is to continue it next year for next year's kindergarten class. So an exciting opportunity to couple together the existing incentive we have in kindergrad with an additional $100 from this donor. So grateful for that opportunity to jump in and help folks in that community save. Vestwell partner meeting. Vestwell hosted a number of state clients in New York back in April, and Caitlin Lau, our operations director, represented Oregon at a series of meetings, provide opportunity to collaborate, learn from fellow states, and also do some strategic planning with Vestwell. Financial Empowerment Awards, this is a little bit outside the scope of the board, but it's part of what our division does. So just wanted to share with the board that the Financial Empowerment Awards were handed out in April as part of Financial Literacy Month. We're happy to recognize Becky Tucker from Caldera High School in Bend as the Financial Educator of the Year. And then Uplift Leadership was the community champion, selected by a subcommittee of our Financial Empowerment Advisory Team. A nice feature of that Community Champion Award is that the recipient can then pick another organization to recognize. We call it Pay It Forward. And Uplift Leadership selected Oregon Trio Association in Astoria as another organization to recognize. So we know that we aren't the only people in the state trying to promote financial wellness and want to recognize other folks around the state who are part of our broader team in executing that mission. Diversity and Leadership Scholarship is within the scope of this board, and that it helps annually two young people navigate the costs of college by awarding a scholarship to underrepresented students in the state. Near final in selecting this year's recipients, a committee's been meeting, collaborating with the Oregon Community Foundation on this scholarship, as we've done for the last 4 or 5 years. We have a full class of scholarship recipients at this point. So that's a lot of talking at you. I'll pause for a minute to see if there's additional questions before I transition.
Any questions, comments from the board?
None for me.
Okay, Ms. Turner. Ms. Shuliff.
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay, great. Thank you. Ms. Mann, back to you.
Well, I am going to, Ms. Krifka is next on the agenda to talk about communications. But before we move there, I was going to briefly preview another agenda item we have later around security.
Please.
This is a special agenda item that we've now done annually, and I think it'd be prudent to continue focus around data security. So we'll have Matt Konopinski, the Chief Information Security Officer and Senior Vice President of Eswell, along with Rob Molshin, who's the Chief Technology Officer of Eswell, speak to us about the work they're doing around data security. And on my slide, there was a lot of fun things we're celebrating, making a lot of great progress. And I like to focus on that. But I do reserve a good slice of my brain power to think about our responsibilities around security. At the end of the day, it's nice if we can see investment returns and a good customer experience, but ultimately nothing is more important than keeping the participants' data secure and their money secure. And we rely heavily on our partnership with Eswell to manage the day-to-day of that data security operation, and happy to have Mr. Konopinski and Mr. Molshin just speak in a bit more detail about what they're doing, what they're seeing as our programs grow and more people attempt to interfere and otherwise act in ways that we prefer they not. So I wanted to emphasize it because it's an area of focus for us and hope you all find the presentation helpful.
Thank you for the preview. Appreciate it. Mr. Molden, Mr. Konopinski, we look forward to your presentation in a few minutes. But first, let's move to our communications update. And Ms. Krifka, you can kick us off.
Thank you. Mr. Ford, members of the board, Casey Krifka, Marketing Communications Director for the Treasury Savings Network, for the record. Hold up, Ashley. Can we move forward? We're going to give a very brief overview of the activities this quarter, as well as some of the highlights, and just a quick reminder that the full performance evaluation for the quarter from our marketing agency thesis is included in the appendix if there's any desire to dig in deeper on any of the numbers or highlights that we're presenting. All right, so strategy this quarter, we have a ton of, as Mr. Mann talked about in his executive report, including some rebranding efforts and working on an app and maintains strong engagement from campaigns that we've built in years past and quarters past, really working to refine those efforts and use some of our successful recycled assets to move forward and really set the stage for the next things that we're going to be launching in future quarters. So worked on relaunching our Save Smart and Invest Best campaigns this quarter, really with some messages of it's simple to start saving and some tax appropriate messaging given the time of year in Q1. Really prompted our users to explore Oregon College Savings Plan with our fairly new What If campaign, really answering all of those What If questions that Oregonians may have before committing to open an Oregon College Savings Plan account. Really leveraging stay timing, capturing some new leads as well via our $250 educational giveaway sweepstakes that we do twice a year. This one really focused in on our non-account holder audiences, so those who don't have accounts already. And we'll get into that a little bit more on our upcoming slides. And also really doing some advertising to do some prospecting for our diversity and leadership scholarship opportunity and making sure it gets in front of all the folks that we would want to get that message and share that opportunity with others. And you can see the outline of the campaigns and where we showed up this quarter on the right-hand side of the slide. The only other thing I would call out is that our spending this quarter was up from our previous quarter, but lower than the corresponding quarterly spend in 2024. We're continually working on building our ad spend efficiencies. It's probably more accurate to look at the previous quarter in 2024 that corresponds, just because there's so much seasonality to what we're doing. And depends on if we're launching new ad campaigns or primarily focusing on some recycled assets as we did this quarter. So, but fairly in alignment with what we've done in the past. Some of the main takeaways from the quarter, we're continuing to see new and steady account growth, 4% increase over last quarter, in line with Q1 2024. We're also seeing really strong results, continuing to see strong results in our new account opens, opting into marketing and setting up auto contributions on account setup. So that we've been measuring 10% there, but a lot of those new accounts coming in on our marketing messages, great news, because it helps us to share messages maximizing their account and making sure that they're using it to. This quarter, the campaigns that I spoke to on the last slide, Save Smart and Invest Best, really alternating between those two foundational campaigns in support of that newer What If acquisition campaign. That strategy really saw a nice performance lift across all of those efforts. Really, this is our quarterly focus was creating a more intentional funnel from awareness of what it is that we're asking folks into action. So driving folks and traffic to our website and getting folks to open accounts once they're there. And retargeting is also a part of that. And then as far as a highlight for the Save Smart campaign in particular, we saw a really nice 132% increase in our page visits for that campaign. We also saw 100% increase in clicks to open an account. So those were both great things to see. And there were also on our newer What If campaign, saw 29 clicks on open an account and reached over 10,000 folks. So all of those working really nicely together will continue to be refined as we move forward in future quarters. The marketing of our scholarship and our sweepstakes were also very successful this quarter. Highlights from those will be covered in more depth in the following slides. But you can see here we had 112 scholarship applications submitted, which is 26% growth compared to last year. And that's 119% increase in our clicks to download an application on our landing page. So both really great. We're reaching more people who thought they qualified enough to download an application, which is great. And then finally, last bullet here, baby kindergrad. Mr. Mann mentioned it. All of the stats I have from this quarter, unfortunately, are with our old incentive. So take it with a grain of salt. We obviously have that new nice $100 baby kindergrad incentive, which launched on the 1st of May. We do have ads currently deployed right now with those new incentive amounts. So we'll cross our fingers and see what the results are when they come in. And there's, I think, an opportunity there to increase some of our ad budget after that initial rollout and allow us to really establish a baseline and measure some impact first, though. Nice numbers here. About 975 total accounts opened this quarter were eligible for either baby grad or kindergrad. Looking at some of our campaign highlights, our diversity and scholarship ads ran in February. As a reminder, this is really trying to reach underrepresented and diverse Oregonians who are in high school and will pursue higher education in Oregon in state.
We made a much bigger impact this time around, 23 more applications submitted than last year with a shorter campaign, really concentrating our ad spend in February, improved efficiency by reducing our overall spend, simultaneously running ads for awareness, traffic, and conversion, all working together and guiding audiences towards that conversion action, downloading an application. And then quick note that there was actually a 284% increase in clicks to download the application when you're just looking at our paid ad activity. So not everything that we're doing, but just like the success of our paid ads and driving traffic and getting folks to download. So all of the refinements we've been making over the past years have really kind of coalesced and worked very well this quarter. So we're taking some of those lessons learned and we'll continue to move forward with even more refinements. Our Smart Start sweepstakes, I was very, very happy with our results this quarter. This has also been a major initiative for myself and the thesis team. We've been running the sweepstakes for the 7 years that I've been here, and they've gone through a number of evolutions. And the past few years, we've split them into two different run times. So there's one in fall and one in the early part of the year. They're for separate audiences. So the way we have it running now, our account holders are targeted in the fall and the later in the year. But this one is specifically for our non-account holders. So we were targeting solely to that audience this year. This was the first time we'd done that. This is an opportunity for folks who do not have accounts to enter to win $250 towards higher education in an OCSP account. As you can see here, these numbers at the bottom, really nice stats, about 48% increase in accounts opened during the sweepstakes period. So that's great, but I also want to highlight, it's not just about the accounts opened during that period. All those folks get dropped into our welcome series. So it's a really nice kind of funnel for us to be able to communicate with those new audiences, give them this opportunity, and then also drop them into a series of 5 emails that teaches them about all of the key core components of our program and offers them promo codes as an incentive to open an account, get them over the finish line. So we did see some success from that this quarter too. We had a historically high number of folks going through the welcome series that opted to utilize our promo codes and open an account. So this was really great, drove some really positive action. You can see the conversion rates are also up by about 10% and about a 22% increase in our non-account holder entrance, which is great. So getting all those non-account holders in resulted in a decrease in our overall entries, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It was much more targeted. So despite the overall lower entries, we saw the largest proportion of non-account holders enter ever. A lot of the time it's our account holders doing it. They already have an account. And we love the word of mouth, but the point is not to get them into this. So the increase in non-account holders meant we saw a higher number of account opens during the sweepstakes. So this was our highest conversion rate of all time that we've seen. And it also led to a lower cost per account opened. So we're reaching more people are opening accounts. It's also costing us less to do it. So I think the next opportunity we're gonna pursue with this is really lengthening the time span of the sweepstakes to see if we can increase the total number of entrants.
Sounds like a classic win-win-win.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Last slide here, our website highlights. So we have, as a reminder, approximately about a year under our belt with our new OCSP website that we launched with Thesis. So it's a period to sit and reflect with it. I know we've got more stats that we'll likely share with the board in future, but it's good we can start to see some trends, I think. And with this one in Q1, you can really start to see, like, this is a peak traffic season for us on our website due to taxes. We had about over 232,000 total users. This was about a 10% year-over-year increase, which is fantastic. More folks are getting to our website. And then with the new detailed data we're able to see on the new website, we can really start to understand exactly what information visitors are looking for. So I've got here highlighted our top 5 FAQs for the quarter. Probably surprisingly, all of the top on our site, 43% quarter over quarter. This is, again, a really high traffic time for our website. Everyone wants to know about taxes and our tax credit and how they can better utilize that. So this is really aligning with what we've always assumed is a top priority for our website visitors leading up to tax day. We couldn't really prove it before, but now we're able to track it. And I will say as an added piece here, all of our non-English languages saw an increase in use this quarter with a growth of 39% quarter over quarter. So that's about just under 1,000 total views on our site in languages other than English.
Which languages?
We do. Yeah, we've got a whole breakdown I can share with you. It might actually be in the appendix. I think it is. Okay. Yeah. So similar to the English language website traffic, many of the views were related to tax info for those languages as well. And then I'm just going to add here before I wrap up, on the Able side, as folks here know, we have a pretty modest marketing budget with Able. We try to maximize those dollars. We've started reporting out every other quarter about a year ago. And then the update that I have for you this time around is we just completed our Able brand refresh. So very pleased to be able to talk about that. We were in collaboration with our partners Thesis here, able to develop a really comprehensive brand book for the first time. We've never had that before. We've been building these beautiful ads and reaching out to Oregonians and sharing the news about Able, but we didn't have like a strong guideline or book to reference. So these are our first official brand guidelines. It now reflects Oregon Able's brand presentation that folks are seeing already in our paid ads and in other settings. And the initial phase is already well underway with our new, our refreshed logo visible on our website. We're working to integrate that brand across all of our platforms. And then also to upgrade all of our promotional materials for Able, which has been a long time coming. We haven't done a refresh on our promotional materials in a while. And then the brand book includes logos, color palettes, typography, voice, core messages, pillars, all of the fun things you would expect to see in a brand book, really beautifully packaged. And I think the hope there is that a refined and consistent brand is going to allow us to be more impactful in communicating across all of the channels that we communicate on.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griffith. Are there any comments or questions from the board?
Good work. Thank you. Yeah.
Is Justus. Any comments or questions?
No, I do not.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, let's move now to the security strategy. Mr. Mann appropriately chastened and scared us all. So let's now move to Mr. Konopinski, who can help reassure us. You're up.
Sure. Well, thank you for that introduction, and thank you to the entire board. Quick call out, Casey, I think there might be an issue with your microphone that's in front of you. Both Rob and I were having some issues hearing you. So just the tech guy in me feels it important to call that out. Great. So we're here to talk about security. With me is Rob Mulchan, as stated earlier, our CTO, who has a hand in our security and also our compliance programs here at Vestwa. And he'll get a chance in a few to introduce himself and a little bit about his role and what he does here at Vestwa. But first, maybe I could provide an overview of what we're going to talk about. We're going to see a few key areas that we'll discuss today. The first is going to be general industry overview, along with what the cybersecurity landscape looks like, a little bit about Vestwa security posture, and then we will also discuss a little bit about AI at the end. But first, yeah, let me allow Rob an opportunity here to introduce himself to the board.
Thanks, Matt. My name is Rob Mulchan. I'm the CTO here at Vestwa. I've been here closing on 4 years now, 4 years in September, and I'm very pleased to be able to speak with you today and talk to you a little bit more about what we're doing on the security side. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. So first up here, we're looking a little bit about the industries. Where are malicious actors targeting most of their efforts? And you'll see that the top two here, technology and financial services, is pretty much Vestwa in a nutshell, right? We are aware of this. It's not beyond us knowing that every day that we get up, that we are one of the most highly targeted industries around the globe. So for us, we take this information very seriously. You'll see on the next slide, I talk a little bit about the different groups that are out there, attack groups. If we can move to the next slide, please. Different attack groups that have surfaced most recently, and although their names do seem rather benign, they are very dangerous groups whose sole mission is to go out and take money. The reason for that is because money is starting to dry up within geopolitical groups, and they're starting to see a need to go out and become more self-funded. You'll find that there aren't very much nation-state attacks that are funded by governments. We've seen most recently through China, Russia. You'll see a few others if we can move to the next slide, please. Some of the big headlines, as you'll see here, and I was alluding to earlier, have to do with nation states and a little bit about who they're targeting here. You'll see China, you'll see the Philippines, you'll see Egypt. There are large scale nation state attacks that are funded by governments around the globe happening on a daily basis. We see a tremendous number of attacks recently coming from Romania, coming from Germany, coming from areas that you wouldn't normally associate with wide, large-scale attacks, and we've been able to thwart them successfully. There have been no issues as far as data security goes within the Vestwell platform. We have had, and I'm finding a tremendous amount of wood right now to knock on, we have had no data security breaches. If we can move to the next slide here, please. This is one of the largest breaches that's happened in the most recent time period. Our comptroller of the currency had a full-scale breach. In a sense, someone was able to spy on emails within the OCC for a little over a year, and they had full access to sensitive data that included PII about residents that had information about different banking institutions and their current state in the way of funds, in the way of risk. And this is something that I think raised a pretty large alarm to the U.S. government to say, we have some serious issues within our own walls that we need to take care of from a cybersecurity standpoint. And this is something that really brought that to light and kind of was a red blinking light for them. Obviously not great. If we could move to the next slide, please. Again, I said I would talk a little bit about the pillars, the security pillars here at Vestwell, and these are those pillars. Application architecture, securing the software supply chain, threat modeling and security tooling, and compliance. When we talk about application architecture, that means that from the very start of development at Vestwell, we've had security at the front of the line. We've always been a shift left culture, and security has always been very early on in the process here at Vestwell in product ideation, product creation, product delivery, any enhancements or changes that may take place to the platform. Security is always top of mind and first in line. Securing the software supply chain is very much to do with ensuring that we have a full record of all of the different vendors or all of the different components that go about making up and delivering the Vestwell platform to our customers. So that's ensuring that everybody from our, you know, security camera vendors are reviewed from a risk standpoint by a committee, all the way up to AWS, who is actually the host of all of our production platform. So securing the software supply chain is really a major, major job. It takes a tremendous amount of work to ensure that all of our vendors have gone through risk review, that they're reviewed on an annual basis, and to make sure that they're kind of holding up to the security standards that we promise to our customers. Threat modeling and security tooling has an awful lot to do with all of the tools in the background that go about making our security posture. That can be everything from our 24/7 security operations center through CrowdStrike, to just antivirus and anti-malware solutions that we run locally on Vestwell employee laptops. We also have phishing campaigns. We know that humans are our largest threat internally. We have phishing campaigns that we run quarterly to test Vestwell employees to ensure that they can identify and then surface malicious emails or potential attacks. They are graded on these, you could call them test emails. Anyone who does not pass these phishing test email programs are then referred to for training. We get a report of it, and we ensure that they're able to pass through that program and that they're no longer a high-risk employee. And then the last one being compliance. I work very closely with our general counsel, as well as our compliance teammates, to ensure that everything that we do is within regulatory standards. We have our security standards, right? We have NIST, we have OWASP. But there are obviously regulatory frameworks that we have to adhere to and ensure that we are in compliance. We perform an annual SOC 2 Type 2, and that is something that we can proudly say we've never had a finding on. So we're tied extremely closely to our compliance program. Moving on to the next slide, please. This is really the core team capabilities. I won't spend too much time here, but if we move all the way to the last one, you know, when we talk about data security, specifically data asset management, we know that the protection of PII and sensitive data that Oregonians have entrusted us with is important. It is our North Star. The data security piece is something that we come in and we say every day, we must make sure that we're protecting all of the data that comes across our platform, whether that be in the form of emails, whether that be in the form of reports, or simple security within the Vestwell platform itself. We ensure that everything is managed and secured using encrypted file transport and files being encrypted at rest as well. We have some really neat tooling that I've talked about in previous years around data loss prevention using tools like Nightfall AI to use natural language processing to identify any employees who may be passing sensitive information across certain platforms within Vestwell's walls. That platform, the Nightfall platform, has been running now successfully for approximately 3 years, and we have found tremendous success with it. So we're continuing to invest in additional DLP tooling and security tooling to help maintain our data security posture. If we can move to the next slide, please. This is a little bit about where we're focused. Ransomware has kind of taken a backseat recently to phishing, and that's across almost every organization. Ransomware really was at the height during the pandemic, when we were seeing organizations attacked and held hostage for a tremendous period of time during the pandemic, and we're starting to see that fall off. Those numbers are now being shifted over to more phishing campaigns and social engineering. We're still not taking our eye off that ball, though. We're making sure that ransomware is still something that we're focused on, and along with general security threats like DDoS attacks. And again, I touched on it earlier, the geopolitical and ideological threats are not going away. I think that unfortunately in our lifetime, this is something that we will see continue. We are also tied to our phones now and technology that there's really no getting away from the fact that if somebody wants to do something bad to us, they're really only a small snippet of code away from doing what they wish. So we're not taking our eyes off that ball. Moving to the next slide, please. AI is something that Executive Director Mann and I have spoken about in the past, and it's something that is extremely important to us. We understand that there are certainly benefits to be had in embracing AI, but we're not running blindly towards it. We're really taking a posture of eliminating unchecked adoption of AI. What does that mean? That means every tool that we want to investigate within AI space is reviewed by our risk committee. It's gone over with a fine-tooth comb, and we ensure that we're not using any external LLMs or data pools in order to feed our AI models. We are exploring AI. It has gone through our AI risk committee, and I'm happy to say that all the LLM models that we use and all the data pools that are in use at Vestwell actually use Vestwell data. So there's no PII, there's no sensitive data, and all of the data that is contained in these AI data pools is actually information that you can find on the Vestwell Help Center page. This ensures that we're able to secure all of the data. We're able to make sure that the data, again, is low risk, eliminating that high risk for PII leakage or data leakage of sensitive data. For us, again, we're walking, we're not running towards AI. We see tremendous benefit and opportunity in it, and something that Rob can talk about. But again, we want to make sure that there's this kind of protocol for having checked and ensured that all the risk boxes are checked, if you will. So if we could move to the next slide, please. Oh, end of it. All right. Everybody gets a reprieve now from hearing my voice. I don't know if there are any questions in the room, or if maybe we want to talk a little bit more about AI and hear from Rob.
Yeah, how are you currently using AI in your on your platform?
There's a few different areas we're using it in our platform and then also internally, but I'll start with the platform. So the first is we have really more on the 401k side of our business, so it's not applicable right now to your programs, but we're using chatbots that are essentially trained on our own help materials to help answer first level questions before going to support. It's a very good support deflection rate where people will ask questions and then be, you know, essentially given an answer or linked directly to the help documentation that covers that subject. Simultaneously, we are using email-based agents that suggest responses for incoming requests that we get via email. So we do not right now having the email bots respond directly to consumers, but rather suggest responses to our support agents, and just makes it easier. They look, we say, okay, yeah, that's correct, that's appropriate, tone is right, and then we send that off. And then we're also right now investigating using voice-based AI to let some folks opt out of certain programs. So you call up and you can talk to it and say, hey, I'm gonna opt out of this program, and we're testing that internally right now to see if that's going to be effective. So that's all really essentially customer support use cases. Additionally, internally, we are using it for some additional, well, essentially like code generation is one of the most applicable uses of LLMs. They're essentially trained on text and code data, so it's very easy for them to help suggest code. We are not letting the AI just write our code. We are, of course, doing human reviews. We have very deep security reviews, also automated and unautomated, to make sure that we are not putting any liabilities or security risks out there. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I think of there's two basic areas that we have to be cautious on AI. One is sort of the legal liability risks that we don't want to use it and wind up doing some patent infringement or something like that. And then two is obviously data leakage out into the world where we don't want either Vestwell proprietary information or even worse, our customer information seeping out there into the world. And that's why we control very much the usage we're using.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Marshall. Are there any other questions from any board members?
I don't have any questions. I just wanted to say thank you for presenting it for those of us that don't live in the tech world, presenting it in a way that we can understand your work. So, yeah, thank you.
Ms. Shulis, sure. Do you have any questions?
No, I don't at this time.
Thank you. Great. Now we'll turn to Mr. Golden.
Thank you, Mr. Matt Golden with Vestwell. I lead our 529 ABLE and IRA operation team. So happy to be with you today. I just have a brief update, so we'll go through a couple of slides, if you would not mind advancing. Thank you, Ashley. Okay. So just a few updates to share with you today, just update on the rebrand and a little example of something that we do behind the scenes to improve the website's a broken link tracker, and then a more substantial update, I would say, on some changes to our customer service. So, would mind going to the next slide? I missed that. Okay. I had a different slide. That's fine. So, the broken link tracker is something that's really sounds simple, but as you know, the front door of these programs is the websites. And one of the things that we added on is a daily scan of every link that is on both the college and the ABLE websites. It was very interesting as we turned that on over time, the last month or so since it's been on, we found a few links that have been caught, which is just a great little tool as we maintain the websites on behalf of the plans, just to keep them up to date and as user-friendly and effective as possible. So a great example is just a broken link to a federal and state agencies on Social Security. So That's pretty important if people are poking around and using the plan site for that. So I just want to share that. It's an example of what goes on behind the scenes to keep the front door of these programs running most efficiently and effectively for the programs. Okay. Thank you, Ashley. And then Casey mentioned it, but I did just want to say it was good collaboration for us to update the ABLE sites. I think it came out great, and I think it's great timing for the ABLE program, given the upcoming change of age of onset to age 46 at the start of this year. So I think that's we're in a good position now to put the best foot forward for the ABLE program. Okay, I would say a big update for us. So last quarter, Doug Magnolia from Vestwell was here, and he shared an update on some changes that our partners, the Bank of New York, were making on their customer service approach. And we've been working with the Bank of New York. Obviously, they're a great partner of ours. They handle, at this time, the customer service for both the college and the ABLE program. However, we've come to a new approach, a new plan with them, where we will be insourcing or taking over the customer service handling, meaning the call center, essentially, for both the college and the ABLE programs later this year. And so we're excited about it because it allows Vestwell to handle every interaction with anyone who's coming into the program or transacting on the program, whether they're doing that online or they're calling directly to the program. And it allows our partners at the Bank of New York to focus on really what is their bread and butter, which is asset custodian, back office, accounting of the records. So this transition is going to take place. Right now we're targeting August, but we'll keep the board and the program up, the plans updated. We just think we're going to be able to deliver a better customer service experience. Not that there's anything wrong with it today, but we just feel like owning every part of the user experience makes a lot of sense. I'll give you a great example, and I know Rob Mulchin was just touching on this. I know it's something that the treasurer called out the other day. We'll be introducing chat and live chat, which will be going directly to the customer service team on the Vestwell side as a great way to get immediate response to any question you may have, as opposed to sending an email, which takes time to send and then receive. So that'll be a great feature that we'll be adding in to not only just taking the phone calls, but also another way to communicate with people. So looking forward to that. And it allows all of the Vestwell technology to come to bear for our customer service team. Any questions about that change? Because that's a pretty significant change, but just want to make sure the board is aware of it and had a moment to digest that.
Okay. Thank you. No questions.
You're welcome. Okay, so as we usually do, we take a look back over the prior quarter. The first quarter is always the busiest time from a call center standpoint at the start of the year. And you can see the total calls answered in January were 2,500 or so. The average tends to be about 2,000 a month as you go through the year. And you can see that January was well above that and then came back in February and March. One of the things I will call out, we strive to answer the call and within 45 seconds, we're well above standard. Unfortunately, for the month of February and all throughout the quarter, due a little bit to the higher volume, but also to well above average turnover, unfortunately, on the BNY call center. It's something that we intend to manage a bit differently going forward with our transition. Okay, next slide. Thank you, Ashley. And a similar story on the ABLE side. The talk time was a bit higher on ABLE, as you can see, as you know, how important it is to have conversations with the folks who are have ABLE accounts and make sure their needs are met. Call volume was also a bit up, but you can see that fluctuates. And similar story on the average speed to answer. So calling that out, one thing I will note is that folks always have the opportunity to have a call back if they are not interested in waiting So we call them back directly and keep them in line so they don't have to stay in line if talk times or, speed of answer times are well above standard.
Now, as you are transitioning the call center to your own management, I imagine one of the reasons for that is this, the speed to answer.
That's,
yeah, that number is just unacceptable. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Thank you.
As well. Okay, those are my updates. Just want to pause, see if there are any additional questions.
Any questions from the board? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, Ms. Fitzgerald, I believe that leads us to you.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. For the record, I'm Ryan Fitzgerald from Selwood Investment Partners. The first agenda item I'll cover today is the quarterly data report. And thanks, Ashley, you already got it up for me on the quarterly summary stats. A little bit of just a quick executive summary here, a little housekeeping before we dive into a topic that we'll cover about behavior in the first quarter from savers and all the programs. All the programs are in healthy shape. So new accounts are still being opened across all three programs, Oregon College Savings, the MFS 529, and the Oregon Able program. The numbers are largely in line with how they did last quarter. That's the top line. On the bottom line is total assets. Total assets for the two college savings programs or the two 529 savings programs were flat. And a lot of that has to do with how the markets were this quarter. For cash flows in for the Oregon College Savings Plan, it's a program that's still gathering assets. It still has more flows into the program each year than it does out of the program. For the MFS 529 plan, which is a more mature program, and it's, the industry has moved a little bit away from advisor sold, which that's what MFS program is. The flows are roughly the same in and out. So it's getting about the same amount of new money as is exiting to be used on education-related expenses.
So my first question with regard to this chart is, the quarter you're measuring against is the first quarter of last year, or is it the last quarter of last year?
Great question. It is the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter of
yeah. 84. Exactly.
84. Gotcha. Okay.
And that, so the change is relative to the last quarter.
Gotcha.
Yep. For the 529A, the ABLE program, it's a much newer program and cash flows are still very much in. So assets are up 6% over the first quarter. That's a pretty strong number, all things considered. So the kind of the executive summary there for all of this is that the programs look largely the same as they did in the past quarter and in a healthy position. If we could flip forward then two pages, that would be fantastic. And we'll dive into the topic, specific topic we wanted to cover, which is we've entitled it Saver Behavior. If you've seen any headlines related to financial markets in Q1 and into April, markets were quite volatile. Usually, if I'm getting inbound questions from relatives, that's usually not a good sign for the markets. And that was the case in Q1. So we've highlighted here, this is a chart and it's a little hard to see on the screen, but what it's showing is the market growth for the S&P 500 since the beginning of 2024 through April and, April of this year. And the period we've highlighted in the black box is the really kind of volatile period that was exhibited, surrounding kind of the trade policy and tariff uncertainty that was going on within the markets. What we wanted to look at, and Bestwell was very, gracious to provide all this data because it is quite a bit of work to get everything consolidated and to filter it into the way that you need it. We wanted to take a look at how investors in each of the three programs behaved and how they behaved not only relative to last quarter, but the same quarter of the last year. And in this case, it's actually going to be through April, just to include the volatile month of April as well. If we could flip forward then one page, Ashley, thank you very much. Really, I think the bottom chart is really the one that we focused on mostly, but the top one is important too. And this is for the college savings program. For the college savings program, outflows this March and April, which was volatile, looked largely the same as they did as of last year, slightly increased. That's to be expected. Each year of this program, as it matures, has more and more outflows. It's pretty consistently just growing in outflows year on year. Interestingly as well, so the top chart shows the contributions. Contributions were roughly the same as they were in the same period in the black box for March and April of this year versus March and April of last year. So, you know, this chart doesn't suggest any kind of panicky behavior. It's interesting because this program is the direct sold program. So that anyone can go and sign up on a website. If we flip to the next one, MFS is sold through an advisor or a brokerage. And so these are sold through, so someone doesn't necessarily go and seek these out and manage them themselves. They're professionally managed by their advisor. And so similar kind of behavior here. You know, you do not have large monthly distributions that look anything like a sort of panic or sort of, you know, we need to get our money out of this program now. In what was, you know, covered here, once we do investment performance, it was a, you know, significant sell-off and quite volatile time period. You know, this has the same pattern as the college savings program. You know, outflows were roughly in line with expectations and nothing to suggest kind of a behavior from investors that suggests any type of panic. And you know, the last one there is Able. And Able, the monthly distributions there, 1.5 million in April, 1.2 million in March. April was the largest month of outflows, but it's in line with how October of last year was. So for us, that's not suggestive of, you know, savers withdrawing their money. If anything, it looks like it's maybe tax time. April of 2024 was also the high up until that point in the program. So it looks to us that, you know, on a contributions basis, people are still contributing each month and withdrawing. We don't see any kind of type of major withdrawals that would be suggestive of any type of panic selling.
I mean, what this suggests to me is that tax payments may be influencing both the October payment and the April payment, because if you defer or ask for an extension in your taxes, it's 6 months, which is October. So that would make sense.
Yeah, that's a great, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ford. That is a good suggestion. I always love like the little, because you look at the data and you're like, think of a reason, and then somebody else always has the answer. It's always great to show the data.
Having asked for extensions before.
If we could go to the next slide there, Ashley, thank you. This is cumulative. So this is the first 4 months of this year versus the first 4 months of the previous 3 years. It's easiest, I think, to look at this program by program, and the largest one being the college savings on the distribution side down there at the bottom. And if you look from left to right, you'll notice increasing distributions year on year out. So to us, this looks exactly as it did last year. There was more distributions. Nothing is suggestive of kind of people needing to get their cash out. It's similar story for the ABLE program. Then the distributions for MFS are a little bit more lumpy, but nothing is suggestive of our kind of, you know, the hypothesis anyway, that savers would be panicky or, you know, look to withdraw their funds. And it was a relatively short period of time where the markets did crash and rebound, and that, you know, it remains to be seen over a longer period of time. Had we been into a sustained bear market, maybe behavior would be different. But, you know, thankfully that wasn't the case. I mean, it was just an interesting look at it anyway. I'll briefly touch on the last three slides because they really just echo the same story. If we go on a weekly basis, college savings right at the start of the new year was really the top time for people to make distributions on a weekly basis. I think, you know, my hypothesis, maybe Barry, you know better than I would, but they were really entering the new year. People like to take the distribution for college tuition payments, but I, you know, I don't. That was my best guess.
No, I think that's right.
Yeah,
start up a new semester. So.
And then, so the last two slides, MFS, similar pattern here. And then for ABLE, you know, this one didn't have that same dip right at the start of the year. So I think the good hypothesis on tuition payments being due right at the start of the year. So really, that's all I've prepared for our executive summary. You know, sense of what, you know, we'll vary what we're presenting each quarter, and it hopefully will be topical. I mean, this was a very topical quarter for kind of behavior for investors, and it's really kind of reassuring to see that people aren't shifting around their investments, or at least withdrawing significantly in the height of kind of policy uncertainty and negative headlines in the media.
Thank you very much. It's very good news that Sabre stuck with the program and stuck with their savings behavior. Mr. Turner, do you have any?
No, appreciate the update. Thank you.
Back to you, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Okay, we'll do investment performance next. And we've done a little preview already. So quarter one, if we go forward one slide, we will do the, on the screen here for us a little, but I've got hard copy, so we can do it, no problem. The entering 2025, market participants were highly optimistic. If we go back one, actually, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's perfect. If you rewind to entering 2025, market participants were particularly kind of enthusiastic about the prospects for really U.S. growth and U.S. stock market performance. It's coming off the back of really two fantastic years for the S&P 500, in particular for U.S. large cap tech and anything large cap growth. So the Magnificent Seven had really done fantastically well over the previous 2 years. It was a period of time where policy uncertainty, essentially markets were expecting the administration to emphasize kind of the more pro-growth oriented aspects of their agenda. And instead, the emphasis was placed on the trade policy. And the trade policy led to some very high uncertainty. The result was an uptick in inflation expectations and a downtick in growth expectations for U.S. domestic growth and economic forecasts. The result was quite a bit of volatility and a sell-off in several segments of the U.S. stock market, including U.S. large cap tech, which was down much more than the overall markets were. The growth scare also impacted small cap stocks. They are pretty prone to any type of, they're pretty correlated with any expectations for economic growth. And so they were similarly impacted. On the upside, it was a quarter where diversification really paid off. So any investors with allocations to non-US shares or any type of investment grade bond did quite well. So the middle portion of the page there, from the light blue all the way down to the gray on the left hand side there, those are the diversifiers for diversifying categories this quarter, and they did quite well. So the overall message was any types of tilts away from U.S. large cap tech or tilts towards the diversifying categories of bonds or non-U.S. shares or commodities or any of those asset classes that hadn't done so well over the past few years, they did their job in the portfolio to really buoy things. Let's flip forward one page, and please do ask questions as you have them. I'm happy to answer anything, but I wanted to point our eyes to two charts here that normally don't get a lot of mention. And usually when you're mentioning these, it's because things are pretty uncertain. So in the middle of the top right there, you have the market volatility right next to inflation adjusted gold price. Market volatility is more straightforward, and that really just gives you the how market participants are acting. And in a volatile quarter, that number will rise. And it at the end of the quarter, it reached the level above median, so more elevated by the middle or early part of April, that was at the top end of that range. So as volatile of a time period as we've seen in financial markets in early April, it's significant. Right next to it, so that gives you the gold price per ounce. And that one is interesting because it is now at the top of a range, now pushed all the way through to record highs. So investors typically use gold when there is uncertainty, particularly for the U.S. dollar. And that was the case in Q1, where there was a push to diversify away from the U.S. dollar slightly. And the result was that, you know, all the geopolitical turmoil, was the result was that gold was the beneficiary for numbers of investors. We could flip forward then two pages. That'd be fantastic. First, though, any questions on overall markets?
No.
Great. This page details the investment options available to participants in the Oregon College Savings Plan. This will look very similar to how it did last quarter. I'm happy to report that over the prior year, assets in the program are up roughly $200 million. Some of that is cash flows in, but most of that has come from investment earnings. It's been a strong period for market returns. You know, as a way of setting up the performance for the quarter, if you look in the middle part of the left side for the Oregon College Savings enrollment date options, really the bulk of the assets are from 2032 to 2025. So that's really when people, you know, that's when they've been in the program the longest and had the most to save. They're entering high school. They're at the end of high school. They're right about to spend the money. Right. So the highest AUM one right there is 2025 with the $135 million. And then it decreases down as people spend the money. So that keep that in mind as we flip forward one page. This is quarter-to-date return. Going from left to right is how long until you plan on enrolling and spending the money. If you look all the way on the right-hand side, you'll notice starting in 2020, at the peak there, that's the 2025 fund. So the fund with the most AUM, and it actually was the best performer in the quarter. And interestingly, it did it had a positive 1.8% return. So a very strong return in a period where if you did see market headlines and wanted to go check on your account, you might be a little surprised that actually you had more money than you were anticipating. That wasn't the case for all the funds. The further away you are from enrollment, you did suffer a little bit of a loss, but maybe not as high as if you just followed market headlines. So,
and just pause there for a second.
Sure.
I assume, so check me on my assumption, that the accounts that are the target dates that are further away are much more heavily invested in equities, and the ones closer are much more heavily invested in fixed incomes. Is that fair?
That's exactly right. And it's exactly by design that, you know, by the time they're into college, savers are into college, they've completely gotten rid of their equities. So really the idea is we've really tried to match the portfolios and the duration of the portfolios when exactly people will spend the money over the course of their 4 or 5 year career.
Gotcha.
And it's not perfect because everybody spends their money differently, but we assume for the basis of doing it as the average that people will spend their balance over a 4 year period in equal amounts. And that's probably, you know, that's a rough assumption, but it's kind of the best we can do. So, yep, exactly right. So, yeah, they're designed to be safer. And the other thing I'd mention about the design, now that you've asked about it, is that, you know, lots of programs across the country won't do as granular of a college enrollment period. Lots of programs will move all the money into a college portfolio, which might not be the right duration or matched to the spending of the saver. So it might have a little bit of equity. It might have longer duration bonds that are, in our view, maybe a little inappropriate for a saver who's spending the money, the last of their money, you know, this year or next year. So it is by design to have this very kind of long tail of saving. If we flip forward one page, then I did want to point out 1 year ranks, which are now all above median for the college enrollment date portfolios. you know, these funds are have performed well. They've performed in line with expectations. They've performed in line with the benchmarks, and that by the benchmark is not surprising. There, it's almost exclusively index funds that are used in these portfolios. When we look at a little bit at the MFS program, you'll see some more variation between the index and their performance. I might skip us through a few of these next slides and just mention that these are the individual fund performance, individual options, and performance was in line with expectations. I really don't have anything to note. All of the investment options that were individual performed better than peer medians. They were better than their peers this quarter. So instead of kind of belaboring through each individual line item, just know that they performed in line with expectations and did the job that we expected of them.
Gotcha. Thank you.
MFS. So this quarter for MFS was a good one, and we'll get to performance in a minute. Their investment menu is a little bit more heavy on the enrollment date portfolios and then the target risk portfolios. They don't have the individual fund options that the direct sold plan does, and that's by design. You know, we worked with MFS to come up with the best program to utilize or design a menu that brokers and advisors were using and utilizing, and that's the design we came up with. Performance for MFS, which is on the next slide, Ashley, please. Thank you. It was fantastic for MFS. So all their portfolios earned money this quarter in a very volatile quarter. Even the ones with equity did quite well. So it was a great quarter for MFS. They, you know, attribution-wise, they had a nice overweight in financials. They don't own as much in tech as the indices do, or as much as peers do. And where they do own tech, they own the right ones and underweighted the ones that were the really bad ones. So a good quarter for MFS. It was a welcome one, and you know, very strong performance for them. You know, as the funds performed similarly as you move towards the end of the glide path. As you entered college, and that'll be more typical, that these programs will look very similar for college savings and MFS at the end of the glide path. Where you'll see large differences from quarter to quarter is further away. They're active management, and they so the tracking error will be a little bit higher. On a one-year basis, if we flip forward then 1 year, over the past year, large cap tech has just absolutely dominated performance.
Right. So here,
yes,
the active management and the underweighting of large cap tech means that they're not performing as well as the benchmark.
Exactly.
But they're also not subject to the volatility of the benchmark.
Exactly. Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. So they the same forces that really propelled them in Q1 hurt them over the course of the total last year. So that still, though, in line with expectations for their management style. As you know, the portfolio still have performed well in absolute terms. So up mid single digits across the board. The target risk stake funds, if we could go for there. So if you just focus on the quarter to date column on the far left, they've done quite well, just like the similar funds in the college enrollment portfolio. So they've beaten peers with the similar characteristics as we have in the enrollment date funds. So they've done a good job this quarter in particular. Then that is it for MFS. And then if we flip forward through to Able, you know, maybe before there, any kind of questions on either the college savings programs?
No, thank you.
Great. This is for the Able and Able for All programs. And the way that this is industry's evolved has been interesting over the course of kind of the creation of these starting in the mid 2010s. There's been a de facto kind of industry standard to have three or four target risk portfolios with a cash option. One of the things that we're thinking about and everyone around the country is thinking about, you know, in partnership with Vessel as well, is that as the program age adjustment, as the age of enrollment, age of eligibility, excuse me, is increased to 46, what impact will that have on kind of investment portfolios that people will really want out of these programs? So we're, you know, constantly thinking about that. So that'll be a topic for future discussion, but it's on our minds. It's something that's on industry minds as well. So that'll be continual kind of updates there about how we are starting to think about that. For these programs, they are have similar asset allocations. If we go forward one slide, so the aggressive, moderate, and conservative, those are the target risk portfolios. They did well against their peer groups this quarter and in line with expectations. We've designed those to have a little bit more non-US equity than peers across the country. So they held up better in Q1 than others would have, but over longer periods, that additional diversification into non-US equity has been a little bit of a detractor. The cash account is what, yielding 4.13 or 4.14, I forget exact number, but a very strong number for the cash account there. That is it for my prepared remarks on performance for all three programs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fitzgerald. Ms. Shulis, do you have any questions or comments for Mr. Fitzgerald?
But don't for him, but I do have a question about, I thought I heard that they were raising the age for the ABLE account. Is that what he was referring to by 45?
Yes, to okay. 46.
46. Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Turner.
No questions, comments for me. Thank you.
Thank you. So we've reached the end of the formal presentations for this meeting, and we're now open for public comment. As I understand it, we've had public comments submitted previous to those will be. Are there any folks who would like to make the comments now in person? Or is yours? To turn green and yes, and identify yourself for the record.
Being here, my name is Doug Burnett. Appreciate the being able to hear the insight. I've been a great Oregonian since 6 and passionate about the state. And would love to share some thoughts about the Oregon cost savings plan around the climate options that are available.
Yes.
And has been you know, it was disheartening to see that every option in there, as it is, you know, common everywhere, includes investments in fossil fuel companies, struggle in like trying to save for the future, especially for our children, at the same time as having to invest in. Much more beyond the climate piece of it, the ESG baggage and all the wokeness of it. Is the performance of fossil fuel companies. I do this as a passion project on the side. I'm a creative person, and a couple years ago came across this concept of divestment, and suddenly it turned from something really boring, just like skip over that part of the HR meeting, into like this is a big passion project for me. And so was working with someone who used to run sustainability at Bank of America. And together we looked at mapping out fossil fuel performance over retirement and college savings type of time periods, and turn it actually into a visual where each of these lines represents a quarter and how all the quarter of energy sector fossil fuel companies compared to the rest of the entire industry. And over time, you know, the more green it is, the better, the more red it is, the worse. So over time, you can see, at least a 20-year time frame, just the dramatic underperformance of fossil fuel companies. And, you know, certainly happy to share data on things like that. And I appreciate what you're sharing earlier on, you know, looking to the future and what investors are looking for in the future as well. And, you know, we're talking about you guys were talking about the tech sector volatility, yeah, just in general and even right now, but it's actually more volatile in fossil fuels than it is in tech right now. And I imagine, you know, tech is a lot more weighted than fossil fuels, but that being still, like, in a college savings plan where you have to have your money at a very specific time, and certainly in the target date funds, less exposed to that. But would love to strongly encourage that at the next board meeting that we're able to vote on offering a climate fund in the lineup. And I have personally seen that can play into signups as well, where somebody like has a new avenue to come in, like myself, like, I don't know, I guess maybe I want to do a college savings plan, but can suddenly come in and have like a passionate reason that is also financially, you know, falls fiduciary duty. And I've actually seen that. I've done a few, a little bit of work in this. I worked with Don Cheadle on the campaign last year. It got 25 million views just from random everyday people. I'm actually working with Mark Ruffalo right now in the same, you know, I've been passionate up in this, that I've started to like join in those kind of things. And there's a lot of excitement and demand around this type of like systematic influence on climate. So again, I strongly urge that we can discuss this at the board. And maybe the last thing I'll say is beyond just having a fossil free option, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might, my understanding is that there are no funds available in the college savings plan that vote your shares on behalf of the climate. And usually it votes your shares as proxy or you know, however the board wants to go, and 95% of the time it goes against climate. So in a case like this where it's a fund that's for that purpose, having one that is also aligning that has that would mean a lot to me. And so our current ESG option it includes fossil funds, fossil fuels. And so would love the idea of even you know, swapping out the ESG option into as opposed to just adding. I'm happy to discuss more afterwards.
Thank you for your comment. Much appreciated. As you know, we are in the process of evaluating all of our portfolio options in the plan, and there'll be more to come. So, thank you.
I should have started there. It has been wonderful meeting with you, and I've heard about some of these experiences, and there's a lot of pushback because things are, you know, formed and lots of praise for Oregon Treasury for action, and I do feel very heard as well, my colleagues.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Okay, we've got one more person. Oh. Identify yourself for the record.
Hi, my name is Isaac Burnett, and I'm 9 years old. Last year, I started a t-shirt making company called J5. I've been able to put 50% of the money I've made into long-term savings, and all of my savings are in a diversified fossil-free fund. It feels really good to know that my money isn't hurting the planet. My dad told me that all the options in the Oregon College Savings Plan invest in fossil fuel companies. It's like I have to give money to fossil fuel companies if I want to save for college. It feels so weird that to help my future, I have to hurt my future. Please give us a fund that doesn't include fossil fuel companies.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. We have another. Oh, we have one more person. Okay. Please come up. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Back to follow.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is.
It's beautiful.
Make sure the button is green and then identify yourself. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm Patty Sloan, and I'm representing the Environmental Faith Network.
Great.
And it's a group of about 12 to 15 churches in Salem that have, most of them have divested from fossil fuel. And we have, and it's not just churches, it's faith groups like Six and different ones like that. We're not just Christian groups, but we've all come together because we want to protect the planet. And I was just so amazed at all the things you're doing in here. This was not part of my world when I was having children. And this is amazing. This is a really wonderful thing. And so I come to you today because you are doing such a wonderful thing to ask you about fossil fuel, to really truly consider it and to the damage that it does to the planet and to the children. I know that the fossil fuel companies have lied to us since the 60s. They've hired the best scientists. They've buried the best reports. And they've continued to lie to us, and they've hired false scientists. And we know that many of our elected officials today are climate deniers. And when you look around at what's happening, it's hard to be a climate denier. I grew up in Oregon. I picked berries in the Dundee Hills. I know what it was like to work in the fields, and I know what the fields were like back in the day. I knew what four seasons were. And so I'm really asking you to consider fossil fuel divestment, because it's not about you, and it's not about the numbers. It's an ethical question that we have to ask about what's going to happen to our children. And it's long term, and it's forever. I appreciate all of you, all of your efforts. Numbers look great, but I think people, this creation that we were left to take care of, that is the most important thing you need to consider. I appreciate you all so much. Thank you
very much for your comments. Do we have anyone else for a proper comment? Okay. First, I want to thank our presenters. I want to thank our public commenters for being here. I want to thank my fellow board members for participating in this meeting today. Our next meeting of the Oregon 529 Savings Board will be on August 21st, and it'll be in our Tigert office. Without any further business, call this meeting adjourned.